Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
The truth is the most convincing story that maps onto reality, and that's why the central narrative is falling apart.
Right now in the United States, people should not be walking around with masks.
We must see the central narrative for the fiction that it is. We are Americans.
While elections are sometimes messy, this was a secure election.
The founders began the fight for human liberty and self-governance, and it's up to us to finish the job.
I tell you what, we are in a truth emergency right now.
This is the end game.
It's Thursday, April 11th, 2024, the 1177th day of dystopia. I'm your moderator, Chris Paul. Let's be reasonable. A warm welcome and hello to all of you listening to the podcast on the day of its release. The only way to do that is by becoming a paid subscriber at imyourmoderator.substack.com. You can do so for as little as $50 a year or $5 a month, and in doing so, you will be supporting me, the work I do, and this show as it expands. And if you can't or you simply don't want to, continue listening to the podcast for free a couple days later on a wide variety of podcast platforms and, of course, Rumble. All I ask is that you share it with your friends. You can find the links to the podcast, the writing, the social media, and the merch site by visiting linktree.com/I'mYourModerator. So I've been threatening all week to get into some geopolitics, and we're going to do that today, but we're going to stick with Donald Trump and American politics to kick things off. Donald Trump was traveling around the country yesterday. He landed briefly in Atlanta, went over to a Chick-fil-A, bought everybody food, made friends with everyone in the restaurant, big smiles. They seemed to love him. And that's weird because we're told that Atlanta is a Democrat stronghold. Citizen Free Press highlighted a post by an account on X, formerly Twitter, that goes by Florida Politics Enjoyer, that says the Chick-fil-A location that Donald Trump visited today in Atlanta is located in a precinct that gave Joe Biden 92.3% of the vote and is 91% black. And Citizen Free Press included a picture of Trump at Chick-fil-A where the employees are exclusively black, all of them smiling, and captioned it, "Newest members of MAGA." And that certainly does seem to be the trend. Maybe one day we'll get the real results out of Fulton County from 2020, and we'll get to see just whose votes are being stolen by the Uniparty. Because I have this weird sneaking suspicion that there is no way 95% of Black Americans are going out and casting their votes for the same Democrats whose policies destroy their communities while exploiting them all for the politics of racism. Well, Trump got back on his plane and he flew down to Mar-a-Lago, where there was a big kind of red carpet press event for DJT, the Trump stock that was formerly DWAC, and for that company's main product, Truth Social. Carly Bonet, who many people know as Midnight Rider, was in attendance and captured this video of Trump speaking. And it's about 3.5 minutes long, so if you've already heard it, feel free to skip ahead.
He does follow us and does vote for us, believe me. In Beverly Hills, I was told that 61% of the people voted for me, and if you talk to them, about 25% like me. But, you know, they want to pay low tax, and they want to pay low, they want to have low interest rates, because bad things are happening to our country. Our country has never been in danger like it is right now. We could end, you know, 6 months is a short period of time, but it's a long, it's like an eternity. It's like an eternity in terms of the danger we could be in because of the power of weaponry and not only nuclear, biological weapons and other things. I know them all. And the power is something that nobody has ever seen in the history of the world before. And we have a man who's grossly incompetent negotiating against Putin and Xi and Kim Jong-un and all these people. And we're in great danger during this period of time. We're in great danger. And I just hope that nothing happens that's going to be bad. But we're very close. We are much closer to a World War III than we ever have been. And everything he said and the way he talked with Putin, the way he talks to China, China wants to go into Taiwan. Putin never, ever would have done Ukraine. All of these things would have never happened. You know what else wouldn't have happened? Inflation, because inflation was caused by energy. And because of his energy policies, which were insane, the energy went up so much, everything else went up. And now 2 days ago, they announced very bad numbers. You saw that with regard to inflation. So I think we're going to win. I don't say ever that we're going to win because they cheat like hell. I'll tell you what, if they didn't cheat, I would stand here and say this election is over. But we've got great people, Michael and Lara, and we have great people that are watching. I said, don't give me any votes. I don't need any votes. We got all the votes we need. Just make sure on election day, election period, because it's a period now, it's, some of these things go 48 days. It's ridiculous. But just make sure that on election period, election day, there's no cheating, or keep the cheating down to a minimum because they can't help themselves. They have no shame. They'll do anything they can. They are really horrible, horrible people who I believe hate our country. Yep. I said, if you can guarantee that the elections are just relatively honest, just relatively, there's nobody that can beat us. There's never been a movement like this in the history of our country. Make America great again, America first. Yeah. There's never been anything even close to it. And I just want to say on behalf of the Trump family, we're working like hell. Somebody, look, I mean, look, again, leaving early in the morning, going all over the country to raise a measly $13 million or 12 and a half, whatever the hell they raised today. It's not an easy way of life. But then I say, but the coal miners have it much tougher, right? They go into the mines, they catch black lung disease by the time they're 35 and they don't get paid very well. That's a tougher life, right? But I want to say that we are going to do everything we can. We're going to win this thing and we can turn it around. If we don't win it, I'm not sure you're, and I say this, and I started saying it now, some people are starting to say it, other people are saying, oh, it's very radical. If we don't win this, I'm not sure this country's ever going to have another election again. Have you ever heard that, Sebastian? I really believe that if we don't win this election, I'm not sure that these people are communists. You know, when I used to stand up and talk about socialism, we will never be a socialist country. We will not have socialism in the, I was right. We skipped right down to communism. We avoided socialism. We're in a communistic, this is like an old-style Soviet Union.
Now, I'm not sure how long Trump talked for. That is the clip that was posted. So I have no idea if there was some point at which he said something far more interesting than this that I simply missed. Apologies. But I thought it was very interesting that he's talking about going around and fundraising. Doesn't seem to be all that focused on it. We talked the other day about how Trump made $50 million at a fundraiser in Palm Beach over the weekend. And he says he made another $13 million yesterday. And there are still, because of their reliance on the media and maybe just how accustomed they are to thinking of politics in this way, there are still people who really focus in on the fundraising. They tell you that's how elections are won. But where is that money going? We're told it's going to advertising, but it's certainly not going to the old style of advertising. There aren't just billions of dollars worth of television commercials playing over and over and over again that the people are convinced by. They're doing online ad spends, which means data analysis and micro-targeting and influence over the algorithms, various censorship steering people away from certain content. All of that is part of that online ad model. And then you've got the fact that if you're pushing money into campaigns, as Mark Zuckerberg did in 2020, you're talking about buying off election officials and election judges and actually building the election apparatus in these states around the country. The picture we can actually see in real life suggests that this money is being spent by and large to rig elections for the candidates favored by the Uniparty and for the issues the Uniparty needs to push through for its agenda that it can't get done in normal political processes without great pushback from the people. It's much easier to simply tell the people, oh, this is what you voted for. If we had free and fair elections where the reported results accurately reflected the will and intent of the voters, we wouldn't need billions of dollars spent on the elections. The money wouldn't be a factor. Our elections wouldn't be the conclusion of mass marketing campaigns where we are told various brands of particular lies to steer us into supporting one side or the other of the Uniparty's agenda, imagining that we are somehow influencing issues and creating a better world while we are really just convincing everyone that our elections are fair and this is the best we can get. OAN reported yesterday on a private event that was attended by none other than Ron DeSantis over the weekend, where people say Ron committed to helping to fundraise for Donald Trump, as if that is something that Donald Trump needs Ron DeSantis to do. A DeSantis advisor told NBC News that Ron said it in front of a group of people at the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in South Florida. Texas businessman Roy Bailey said that Ron is, quote, committed to helping Trump in any and every way. He said, we are going to follow his lead and we're excited to do everything we can to get Trump elected. I will follow the governor's lead and I will do anything that he or President Trump ask me to do to help him win this election. He said, I know where there are DeSantis supporters all over Texas and all over the country that will want to help President Trump. So that's what I'll try to make happen. So DeSantis and DeSantis donors are ready to hop aboard the Trump train. Now that comes after 7 months of an anti-Trump shadow campaign waged online by some of the most reprehensible Con Inc. media losers anyone can ever imagine. And by the way, they're all still doing it. But Ron officially launched his campaign on Twitter in an absolutely embarrassing political car crash of a launch event, supported by all of these Con Inc. media losers and some very serious intellectuals on Twitter. And then his reprehensible anti-Trump shadow campaign became a reprehensible anti-Trump public campaign, at least to the extent it was a campaign at all. We are still in the process of getting through these fake primaries, though the winner has been decided. We had the fake debates and all of that. Ron DeSantis went after Trump. He said that Joe Biden was a legitimate president. And of course, Ron has done nothing to ensure election integrity in Florida. And unless he's doing something behind the scenes, he hasn't done anything to even investigate stolen elections in the past in Florida, something he could have done immediately in November 2020. So Ron had his big campaign online, we were told, for a while by Con Inc. media and influencers. that Ron DeSantis was the right man for the job. He was certainly a major primary challenger to Donald Trump. But when that was put to the test, in reality, Ron DeSantis simply disappeared because there is no Ron DeSantis movement. It only existed online and in mainstream conservative media. When the spotlight was turned onto Ron DeSantis, he went from America's governor into a booger-flicking meatball who wears high heels and loses debates to all the contenders on stage, even when they're Gavin Newsom, and to Donald Trump, who never appeared on stage once. And now he's declaring that he's back on the team. And of course, he's not the only part of the Ron DeSantis op to be attempting this. Now, it's important each and every time we talk about Ron DeSantis to mention that, yes, it could be a kayfabe operation designed to draw out Con Inc. and the conservative donor class, but there's no reason to believe that any of the supporters, however few there were, and the media figures and influencers who got behind him are included in that fakery. They are the people who would be drawn out, not the people doing the drawing. But since the Ron op has fallen apart and Ron dropped out of the fake primary, all of these people have tried to come back into the fold and say, yes, they're supporting Trump, but only for the good of the country, because we can't deal with another 4 years of Joe Biden. And of course, that was ostensibly their motivation for supporting Ron in the first place, because Ron was the only one who could beat Joe Biden in this close election that we are certain to have since the last election was so close. And of course, free and fair, safe and secure, the reported results accurately reflected the will and intent of the American voter. Otherwise, supporting a candidate other than the president from whom the election was stolen would be tantamount to treason. And they would never do that, not with as committed as they are to supporting America, people like Ben Shapiro, Kurt Schlichter, John Cardillo, Jenna Ellis, Steve Dace, the whole squad, Jesse Kelly, Dave Rubin, the cast of Fox News, the cast of The Blaze, the cast of The Daily Wire, and of course, all of the Salem media people whose print outlets were specifically backing Ron DeSantis in full, all of their writers. It was incredible. Town Hall, Red State, PJ Media, all of them part of the DeSantis op. And now all of them are getting back aboard the Trump train, but only sort of. They still believe all those things that they said about Donald Trump were true. And they'll still repeat the same things about the 2020 election, because they can't just say, yeah, we were lying for the sake of hopefully gaining more power and influence among the conservative establishment. That would be the honest answer, of course, but if they were honest people, they wouldn't have been supporting Ron DeSantis in the first place. As you might imagine, many of them, if not all, lost their minds on Monday when Donald Trump put out his statement on abortion. We talked about the members of the uniparty right saying Donald Trump wasn't committed enough to the pro-life cause, despite the fact that he had done more for that cause than anyone in 50 years. And why were they doing that? Because first and foremost, they are members of the uniparty right. They exist to serve the uniparty and its agenda. Their ostensible principles, to the extent they have any principles at all, are held and expressed for political advantage. They are brought out when expressing them might help in achieving certain political goals. And upon expressing these principles, they will tell you that they still want Donald Trump to win, of course. They would never want Joe Biden to win again like he won in 2020, freely and fairly and legitimately. He is, after all, a legitimate president, according to all of these people. And they don't want Joe Biden to win again. So they are going to try to help Donald Trump understand where he is getting everything wrong so that he can once again attract voters like them. You know, the truly principled people, the kind of people willing to lie about the usurpation of this country simply to preserve our institutions. And what are our institutions? Oh, they're all the institutions built by the uniparty, the deep state, and the administrative state. That's who's been in control of those institutions. That is what they mean when they say they are preserving our institutions. And if the preservation of our institutions requires the usurpation of our government by illegitimate puppet actors working on behalf of a global regime, there is no way to call these people American. One of the leading DeSantis simps, Kurt Schlichter, posted an article in Salem Media's Town Hall this morning with the headline, "Time to Rethink Your Never Trumpism." And we'll just hit a couple of passages here. This is mindless filler content for Town Hall. "Okay, my Trump-shy friends, it's time to put aside your fussy principles about how icky Donald Trump is. This is serious, and we need all hands on deck to throw Biden overboard before he gets a whole lot more Americans killed. I get that you don't like Trump. Let's agree that he's icky for the purposes of this discussion. Let's agree that his tweets are mean, that he's not a conservative ideologue, that he says dumb things and gets into useless fights, and that he does many other unseemly and annoying things. Let's agree that all this is true. Let's concede that in normal times, one might want to forego supporting a guy like that. But these aren't normal times. This is getting real. This is life and death, not just for cops and soldiers, but maybe even for you and your family." Now, this column isn't directed toward the professional never-Trumper dorks, the treacherous weirdos who make a living off of going on MSNBC and selling out their former allies. This is for the Republicans who have thought about it and have a real problem with Donald Trump. I get it, even if I don't agree. Okay, Kurt. Well, you were one of the leading DeSantis simps, and Kurt Schlichter is absolutely one of the worst, most dishonest, most bad faith people you will ever see. He brands himself as a very, very tough guy. He's always doing the buy guns and ammo tweets so that you can know he's a true American patriot. And a couple posts later, he's going after MAGA and talking about how Donald Trump wasn't strong enough to win the election after the Democrats stole it. Therefore, we need Ron DeSantis instead. He's talking about never Trump dorks who make money by essentially creating opposition media content. That's him. That's Kurt Schlichter and all of the DeSantis simps. That's them. That's what they do. During DeSantis' abomination of a campaign, Kurt Schlichter made all of the points he is now arguing against. But here is the crux of his article. The thrust of his argument is that this is a binary choice. You actually do have to choose the lesser of two evils, and that's Donald Trump. So not only do you need to choose that, you need to do it enthusiastically, even if he's almost as bad as Joe Biden, which, according to Kurt Schlichter, he basically is, even though Kurt Schlichter's argument for Joe Biden's legitimacy makes him a bigger Biden supporter than many of the people who voted for Joe Biden. But that's too complicated for the DeSantis simps to understand. They are at the intellectual kids table on Twitter, and they actually think that they're all going to get away with lying about our stolen elections. But here is what Schlichter writes of the people who might choose to sit out and not support Trump, thereby allowing Joe Biden to be elected again. What else are you choosing? Well, you're choosing to abandon Israel to Hamas. That's what Joe Biden is doing. You're choosing to throw the Jewish state to the mercy of those psychopaths. And you're doing it because you don't like Donald Trump. Come on. Kurt Schlichter, of course, was one of those people after Israel's 9/11, the paragliding go-kart incident of October 7th last year, arguing that Israel should glass the desert. And there was no dispute to be found among any of the DeSantis simps. Of course, one of the biggest DeSantis supporters was Ben Shapiro, who created the phrase "sometimes Trump" and told us what that meant. He would support Trump when Trump was doing exactly what he wanted, except Trump was never doing exactly what Ben Shapiro wanted. He would say, yeah, Trump's making the right decision, but he's not doing it quite well enough. What we need is someone smarter and more effective with fewer personal defects, that person would really get the job done. People like this create a permission structure for people to collect the incentives of the party of false decorum by catering to the views on Donald Trump of the uniparty left, which leaves us in a situation where all sorts of people who may well support most, if not all, of what Donald Trump is doing, still will never say it in public, because the safe route is to express certain conservative values and principles and certain positions on various issues, while also saying that all of the claims about Donald Trump's character and Donald Trump's intelligence and competence are all true. They disavow nearly everything about Donald Trump and his supporters and still call themselves conservatives, still pretend they care about the country, while they clearly, openly, flagrantly support the global regime and its project and its American representation in the uniparty. People get upset about these conversations. They say, you are being divisive. These people are our allies. These people absolutely are not our allies. These people were willing to lie about our stolen elections in hopes of collecting slightly more power and influence and wealth by being servants of Ron DeSantis and the GOP establishment donor class. Shapiro went viral last week with a screed about those people out there who claim to be just asking questions. It's not fair to just ask questions. You see, it's not fair to generate cognitive dissonance or doubt simply because the issue at hand is an unknown. It's better to just spread blatant disinformation, as Ben Shapiro does, and then claim that if you don't agree with him, it's anti-Semitism. On Tuesday, he posted on X, formerly Twitter, so much of our politics is about deliberately ignoring the underlying question. For those who want a ceasefire in Gaza, the underlying question is, do you want Hamas to survive as an operational entity? For those who want defunding of Ukraine, the underlying question is, do you want Russia to ingest Ukraine? Now, Ben Shapiro loudly and vocally lets everyone know that he does not care about the beliefs and the desires of the American people. That is all irrelevant to Ben Shapiro. He pitches an agenda and he tries to convince his audience to go along with it. He says he's conservative, but he is really a neoconservative, which is not conservative at all. It's just an outgrowth of Trotsky. Ben Shapiro is a militant global communist. That is simply what the ideology demands. That is the end of that ideology. That is the direction it goes in. What kind of conservative with any sense of what the American people care about could be pushing for funding for Israel and Ukraine in the middle of April in 2024? Everyone has already seen through it. And we may get back to some of this in a little bit, because, of course, we have an Israel versus Iran war being created in the Middle East right now. We need a World War III somehow. How are we going to get it? But the point is not to focus on Israel or that conflict or who's right or wrong or what should be funded. The point is that these people continue to all go in the same direction at the same time. And you got to think it's for the same reason. It has always been discreetly anti-Trump, which Ben Shapiro at least owns. He says, I'm sometimes Trump. When our interests align, I will be pro-Trump. Otherwise, he is blatantly anti-Trump. These people have spent 3.5 years maintaining as one of their fundamental and foundational beliefs that Donald Trump actually lost in 2020, and that our elections are free and fair, safe and secure, and that the reported results accurately reflect the will and intent of the voters. They have claimed that Trump was the reason for Republican losses in every election cycle since the 2020 election. They cheered Republican losses in the 2022 midterms because they knew they could blame it on Donald Trump and elevate establishment conservative candidates. And they have consistently changed their logic in doing so. Donald Trump was anti-science during COVID. Donald Trump was a racist during BLM. They'll hide behind whatever issue it is and push their principles, but they will be anti-Trump each and every time. They hid behind their support of Ron DeSantis, and now they're hiding behind their support of Israel, but they are pitching anti-Trump at every opportunity. And why would they do that, you might ask? Ron DeSantis has already lost. Donald Trump is obviously going to be the GOP presidential candidate, and he absolutely must win because Joe Biden is clearly the puppet candidate of the uniparty left. He is an old, corrupt, demented pervert whose puppet presidency is making Americans embarrassed for their country. Why is it necessary for these people to continue going after Donald Trump and his supporters at every turn? It's not their principles. It can't be their principles. These people don't have principles. They get paid $1 million a week, in the case of people like Ben Shapiro, to keep their audiences 3 years in the past on an informational timeline, while convincing them to accept the official story from the Uniparty, hewing to the central narrative, even about the most important issues in the world. It's definitely not their principles. These people are not our allies. They are the controlled opposition of the Uniparty left. They are the Uniparty left's allies. They are part of the Uniparty, just as the members of the Uniparty left are. And so if you were running things on the Uniparty right, and these were your foot soldiers, what would you want them to be doing? Well, you would sell yourself as Trump-friendly, at least sometimes. You know, when Trump is doing the exact thing they demand he do. But when he's not, well, you just assume that all of the complaints against Trump from the Uniparty left are true. He's stupid. He's incompetent. He surrounds himself with terrible people. He's got all these massive character deficits. He might go to jail. He might go to jail. You know, guys, he might go to jail. Now, the thing is, you just can't push those positions hard enough that they're going to make Trump supporters stop listening to The Daily Wire or to Dave Rubin's show or to the shows on The Blaze or to Fox News. It's a delicate balance. How anti-Trump can you be while still being convincingly sometimes Trump? That's the question. Because despite how much it seems like everything is about Trump, from the perspective of the Uniparty right establishment, Trump and MAGA are just something they're going to have to deal with for another 4 years. But as long as they maintain control over the flow of information to voters who would either vote for MAGA or the Uniparty right, well, they can just subvert him in the same ways they did for the duration of Trump's first publicly recognized term. And what's the best way to do that? The best way to do that is by having candidates from either the Uniparty left or the Uniparty right win elections down ballot, or even better, win primaries over MAGA candidates. Because the public image is that all of these people are coalescing around Donald Trump, MAGA supporters, and the MAGA agenda. But the truth is, all they're doing is running the exact same program that they ran in 2021, 2022, and 2023, while accounting for the fact that they can't be explicitly anti-Trump as they were throughout that whole time. These people's public persona will be anti-Biden and sometimes Trump, while reiterating over and over and over again how important the elections are, while refusing to question their legitimacy. It's easy to say that Donald Trump is in full control of the GOP at this point, and that's true to some extent, but it's not true everywhere at every level, and it's certainly not true of conservative establishment media. There is a set of goals from the GOP establishment and elite Con Inc. media that have nothing to do with the success of Donald Trump or MAGA, and nothing to do with thwarting the Uniparty agenda. They exist to support and maintain the controlled opposition dynamic. Their commitment is to the Uniparty on behalf of the global regime because, first and foremost, they are committed to the party of false decorum and the incentive and punishment structure within it. None of these people are going to be prominent MAGA media figures. They need to maintain the status quo in order to maintain their influence, their power, their wealth, their status. And that must remain in place in order to preserve the Uniparty's controlled opposition dynamic, through which all of their political agenda is pushed forward. It doesn't work without it. They cannot sell their agenda to anyone, which is why we have one party that pushes the left side of the Uniparty agenda forward while claiming to work against the right side of it. And we have another side that pushes the global adventurism and militarism forward, which we are told is somehow conservative, while pretending to thwart the left side of that agenda. But they don't thwart it at all. The entirety of that agenda continues marching forward as it has throughout our entire lives. Our purpose and the true opportunity of this moment is to step outside that controlled opposition dynamic, finally expose it for what it is, and as soon as people recognize it, it no longer works. If there is a finish line on this phase, that's the finish line. It's not being declared the winner of a rigged election that, truth be told, we don't know will actually happen. It's the country understanding that this uniparty-controlled opposition dynamic, this illusion of a two-party system that pursues one agenda on behalf of a domineering global regime, they are the problem, and the people, despite their superficial differences, are the solution. Now, I know that some of these ideas will be familiar to you if you have listened to this show for a long time, and I don't mean to belabor the point, but when I see people celebrating that Ron DeSantis is going to be raising money on behalf of Donald Trump, I have to wonder if people just haven't learned the lessons of the past few years. We don't need these people's help. They are not our allies. We don't need to compromise with them. We don't need to be nice to them. They will come in our direction or they won't. And if they don't, then they can deal with the products of their own bad judgment. In a free and fair election, we do not need them. We have a vast majority. Donald Trump had a vast majority in 2020, which is why they needed to steal it and then prosecute anyone who happened to notice. The constant propaganda and censorship, the threats and prosecutions against the people, the labeling of Americans as domestic terrorists for going to school board meetings. None of this would be necessary if their agenda were popular. We wouldn't need a uniparty if their agenda were popular. They steal elections because the majority of people don't want what it is they're selling. Joe Biden didn't generate 28 million more American voters, as the reported turnout of 2020 suggests. And we don't need the support of people who still lie about that. And to be clear, if they want to get on board for real, they are more than welcome. But these people aren't coming aboard in an effort to push the MAGA agenda forward. They're coming on board and telling us, hey, you really need our help. And to get it, you're going to have to listen to us. They have no leverage, zero leverage. You have to remind them of that. The idea that we should pretend the 2020 election results were real and that we are desperately in need of each and every vote and should compromise our own principles in order to get it is absurd. That's how we get a country in the state it's in. Donald Trump doesn't need Ron DeSantis's fundraising. We don't need the Daily Wire and the Blaze and town hall cuckolds to be our intellectual leaders. And no one needs the votes or the support of the DeSantis simps. There are 12 of them and they're all retarded. Now, two more quick stories before we really actually get into geopolitics for real, I promise, almost definitely. This is the USA Today. Mike Johnson and Donald Trump to promote bill to prevent non-citizens from voting. What? That is a hell of a headline. House Speaker Mike Johnson will promote a bill with former President Donald Trump at his Mar-a-Lago residence aimed at preventing non-citizens from voting. Johnson will hold a joint press conference with Trump on Friday at the former president's Mar-a-Lago residence, where the top House Republican will tout the legislation to, quote, elevate the issue of non-citizens voting in federal elections, end quote, according to a person familiar with the planning. The event is also an effort to rally Republican lawmakers to, quote unquote, get on the team on the issue of election security, the person said. However, non-citizens are already not allowed to vote in federal elections in the United States, and it's not a common occurrence. And the article links to a Washington Post fact check by Glenn Kessler. The former president has long falsely claimed that there was widespread voter fraud in the 2020 presidential elections. And even Ben Shapiro agrees that wasn't true. The bill also comes as House Republicans hope to portray a united front, despite the chaos that has often consumed the lower chamber. Their meeting will be the first public event with the two Republicans and comes at a critical moment for Johnson's speakership. The speaker is currently facing an ouster threat from conservative firebrand Marjorie Taylor Greene and has also drawn the ire of other ultra-conservatives in the House. Now, I absolutely love this because it will be a magnificent sifter. I've talked about the concept of sifting for a few years now. This entire process over these years is a sifting process. You've probably noticed this in your personal life, and though that can be particularly sad, it is nonetheless necessary. People are given opportunities to show who they really are, and when they do that, we have to accept that that is who they are, even when that outcome is uncomfortable or maybe even heartbreaking. And I understand that's how it is in our personal lives. But that's not how it is or how it should be. For public figures, we should welcome the sifting process. We should love the sifting process. Whether Ron DeSantis himself was kayfabe or not, the sifting process worked perfectly throughout that period. We found, a whole lot of these people just are not on our side. And this will be another excellent opportunity. What would it mean for Republicans around the country to fail to get on the team when it comes to preventing illegal aliens from voting in our elections? How many of these uniparty Republicans are going to stand up and tell their constituents that illegal aliens already don't vote in our elections, knowing that they do, and knowing that it may well come out in the future that they do, on a widespread, massive scale? Will we see any of these Con Inc. media figures step up and say, no, illegal aliens don't vote in our elections. Our elections are free and fair, safe and secure. The reported results accurately reflect the will and intent of the American voter. That's why we were able to call Joe Biden a legitimate president for these last 3.5 years. I mean, that's kind of a catch-22, huh? You can't very well go certify the fraudulent electors in the 2020 election and then turn around a few years later and admit that, millions of illegal immigrants are voting in our elections. They might not themselves be going to vote and casting their votes, but votes are being cast in their name. Are we going to hear members of the uniparty right running cover and saying, they're in a purple district and people there really don't align with the view that illegal aliens have been voting in our elections? This is the purpose of making these things an issue. We need to turn the spotlight on whoever is unwilling to stand up and get behind Donald Trump on this issue. And this stuff will be critically important in the fall. A lot of people think that I am somehow committed to not voting, or that I could never be convinced that we have legitimate elections, or that I'm convincing other people not to vote. None of those things are true. I have made the point at length that we know that our elections currently are not legitimate. So suggesting that people should go vote in elections they know to be rigged and supporting the apparatus as it exists right now in the vein of, say, Scott Pressler, that, to me, is not honest, it's not moral, and it's counterproductive. I would be proud to go vote for Donald Trump and other MAGA candidates this fall if I know the elections are legitimate. And steps like this work toward making our elections legitimate. I hope that the discussion of this bill sparks a nationwide debate over illegal aliens voting in our elections. I hope this provides mass exposure of an issue that has existed in our country for decades. It's always swept under the rug. We're told that illegal aliens don't vote, but should be able to. They try to pass laws to make this possible. All of it is premised on arguments from the post-Civil War Reconstruction period. I went through a lot of this with George P. Fletcher's book, Our Secret Constitution. Columbia Law School professor argued that the Civil War was fought to overthrow our Constitution and replace it with a new Constitution, and that the Reconstruction Amendments, particularly the 14th, did exactly that. And one of the major issues was slaves being given the right to vote. Are we going to pretend that the illegal aliens brought over here in the global slave trade are somehow different than they were 160 years ago? We see the same people supporting the same political ideology that George P. Fletcher is advocating for, and his interpretation of the Civil War period and the Reconstruction, openly advocating for giving illegal aliens the right to vote in this country. And consider the effects along an informational timeline of all of the debunkings, all of the times the media has said, this isn't happening, this isn't happening. If we actually have this public debate, people will understand pretty quickly, oh, it is happening. And virtually no one is going to approve of that. And once they realize they don't want it happening in the future, they're also going to realize they're not too happy about it happening in the past. And think about Trump's comments from last night in Mar-a-Lago when he was saying, all I want the RNC to do is focus on making sure the cheating is eliminated or at least kept to an absolute minimum because we don't need the votes. We already have the votes. If there was no cheating, he would be happy to say that we have already won. Very interesting framing, is it not? Considering that he already did in 2020 and he wants to make sure there's no more cheating. So we're going to keep having to publicize these issues throughout the rest of the year as he's already doing. I wonder what it all means. All he wants from the RNC is to make sure they set up a system where everything is watched and monitored. But here's the thing. If everything is watched and monitored, it would be a better result for the Uniparty to find a way to cancel the election completely than to allow a free, fair, and legitimate election to occur, because the results would refute the election results of every prior election. There is no way for them to incorporate legitimate election results into the central narrative, because as I've been saying for many years, the main distortion here is the illusion of what sort of society we actually live in based on these past election results and the idea that we're somehow a 50-50 country. We are nowhere close to being a 50-50 country. Now, I'm certainly not the first person to suggest that they might attempt to cancel these elections. Dave from X22 talks about it pretty regularly. I'm not as convinced of his theories as he is, but that's fine. Dave's a smart guy. Maybe he'll be right. Maybe he won't be. Regardless, if the elections look like they are going to be fully monitored, the regime doesn't have too many choices left other than to cancel the election. They're not just simply going to give up. But we shall see. Hopefully, election fraud is fully publicly exposed and understood before this summer is out, and we can have a free, fair, and legitimate election in November and let the chips fall where they may. I would be overjoyed with that outcome. So this is another masterfully conducted narrative move on the part of Donald Trump here, having Mike Johnson down to publicize this as a national issue, to spark a national conversation about it, and to expose some of these uniparty right members of the Republican caucus. It is a win on multiple levels just on its own, and then it's interesting because Mike Johnson is being weakened, according to the mainstream media, based on various perceived failures over the last few weeks, the passage of the spending bills, etc., and now his quote-unquote failure to get the Republican conference together when it comes to FISA. That issue still seems to be in flux as far as I'm concerned. I want to wait and see how that develops a little bit more. It's entirely possible, in my mind, that Trump took his position to see who he could smoke out. But we shall see. So let's update on the Elon Musk versus Brazil story. This is from Reuters today. Musk says X received U.S. House query on Brazil actions. Social media platform X has received an inquiry from the U.S. House of Representatives, quote, regarding actions taken in Brazil that were in violation of Brazilian law, Elon Musk said on Wednesday in a post on X, formerly Twitter. X was asked to suspend the accounts of, quote, sitting members of the Brazilian parliament and many journalists. Musk said in another post, the U.S. House could not be immediately reached for comment. X did not respond. The U.S. House move comes after Brazil's Supreme Court Judge Alexander de Moraes opened an inquiry on Sunday into Musk after he said he would reactivate accounts on X that the judge had ordered blocked. Forbes.com notes that Musk's posts were made after he participated in a Spaces audio chat on X, formerly Twitter. During the discussion, he said, our concern here at X is that we are being asked to do things that are illegal. We are being asked to do things that directly violate the law by a judge. He said that De Moraes was engaging in, quote, abuse of judicial power to an extreme degree that we've not seen in any country on earth. And that is pretty impressive considering the ways that the CIA has gotten in the middle of various countries, their elections, and the social media platforms operating in those countries. And let's just take a brief flashback to May of 2022. This is also Reuters. CIA chief told Bolsonaro government not to mess with Brazil election, sources say. You think maybe that's connected to this issue in any way? The fake president, CIA director William Burns, making trips down to Brazil, telling the president of Brazil how to act in regard to Brazil's own elections? Does that sound like a regime that cares about free and fair elections? What is it these people mean when they say our democracy? All right, so let's leave Brazil for now, but we will stay in South America. A headline caught my eye last week because we have another example of something I've been discussing pretty regularly for the last 3 years or so, and that is the good twin, evil twin dynamic worldwide and the efforts in small countries across the world to remove the global regime aspect from their countries. That's the evil twin faction. Or in the case of larger, more powerful countries, to remove the global regime from territories that were formerly part of that country, but had been seized and controlled by the global regime, who now claim those territories to be independent nations. And we've seen plenty of examples of that. China with Hong Kong, eventually China with Taiwan, Russia with part or maybe eventually all of Ukraine. And I think that we are seeing the same sort of process playing out between Venezuela and Guyana. This is from the Associated Press last Thursday, April 4th. Guyana condemns Venezuela for signing into law a referendum approving annexation of disputed region. And as we have discussed many times, that is what's happened with Ukraine and Russia, despite the fact that our media continues to tell us that none of those elections count. The people of Crimea have voted in referenda to become part of Russia. They've also voted for the Russian president. The same thing is true of Donetsk and Lugansk, these contested areas in eastern Ukraine. They have not only voted in referenda to join the Russian Federation, they have also voted in the recent presidential election for Vladimir Putin. Now, we are told by the global regime's propaganda media mouthpieces that none of these elections are valid and that these territories are still as they always were, but it's not true for the people of those regions. And it's not true in the eyes of the countries now coming together to form what is often by my friend Burning Bright called the Sovereign Alliance. and are more publicly known as the BRICS coalition. These are countries that represent more than half the world's people and half the world's economy. The opinions of these nations individually matter, and they certainly matter when the coalition is aligned. That coalition seems largely aligned with ignoring the lines that were drawn on the map by the global regime post-World War II. And for some, these disputes go even further back than that. Now, we could get into the history of these nations and these regions, and we might come down on one side or the other. We should remember, of course, that history is written by the winners, and the same winners, the global regime, have not only been writing all of this history, they have been making sure that everyone around the world learns this history as the truth and no other history. So even if our reading led us to believe, oh, maybe that territory is in better hands, still being controlled by the British Empire, or still operating as a French colony, that's the point where we should remember that the stories that led you to that belief were written by the people trying to maintain control over those regions, regardless of who the people are or what those people believe. But let's get into this. Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro's move to sign into law the results of a recent referendum laying claim to two-thirds of Guyana triggered fierce condemnation Thursday from the neighboring South American country's government. The text of the law was not immediately made public. Even so, Guyana's Ministry of Foreign Affairs vowed not to yield any land to Venezuela and called the move targeting Guyana's western Essequibo region as an, quote, egregious violation of the most fundamental principles of international law. Oh yeah, international law, that thing that the global regime made up and now enforces as though it really means something. These are the real rules. International law is a clown show because international organizations and governing bodies shouldn't exist. If the United States is no longer the enforcement arm of these global governing bodies, then for all intents and purposes, they don't exist. If there is no one to enforce the laws or rules, and the entities supposedly governed by those laws and rules refuse to participate and don't recognize the legitimacy or authority of the laws and rules or those pretending to enforce them, then the laws and rules don't matter at all. And that is the direction we are headed. Back to the article. In early December, Maduro held a referendum to claim sovereignty over the oil and mineral-rich region that represents two-thirds of Guyana, arguing it was stolen when the border was drawn more than a century ago. On Wednesday, Maduro held a signing ceremony recalling the referendum as a stellar and historic moment. The decision of December 3rd has now become the law of the republic, to form part of the legal structure of the internal political and institutional movement of our country, Maduro tweeted on Wednesday. The decision made by Venezuelans in the consultative referendum will be fulfilled in all its parts, and with this law, we will continue the defense of Venezuela on international stages. Guyana's government responded sharply hours later, quote, "If Venezuela wants to contest title to the territory in question, the proper forum is the International Court of Justice," end quote. Now, of course, the International Court of Justice is part of the United Nations. It's the same court that put out a warrant for Vladimir Putin over a year ago because he committed war crimes in Ukraine. Or at least in those regions that used to be part of Ukraine and are now just Russia. What we are seeing is non-compliance on an international scale by nations. And it's a good model, because when there is mass non-compliance, the illegitimate body who refuses to represent its members is shown to be totally illusory. We've heard plenty of talk about Trump wanting to back out of NATO and end NATO. Same with the WHO and the World Trade Organization. And the same will also be true of the United Nations. These organizations should not exist. Their authority was respected because with it came the threat of military action from the United States military, its global regime allies, and the intelligence organizations of those countries. Once the threat of mass violence is removed, the organizations no longer have buy-in from the member countries whose interests are supposed to be mutually protected as the baseline requirement of those countries being in the organization to begin with. Back to the article. It's not clear how Venezuelan authorities intend to implement the idea of exercising jurisdiction over Essequibo. Maduro said that until the dispute is resolved, the appointment of an Essequibo governor will remain in his hands and that the National Assembly will exercise legislative powers of the territory. He did not provide further details. Guyana and Venezuela have been feuding over the region for decades, with tensions deepening after vast oil deposits were found near Guyana's coast in 2015 in offshore areas intersecting the disputed territory. In 2018, Guyana took the case to the United Nations highest court, asking judges to rule that an 1899 border decision is valid and binding. Meanwhile, Venezuela insists that a 1966 agreement nullified the original arbitration. A court ruling is not expected before next year. Meanwhile, Guyana is collaborating with the U.S., France, and India to fortify its military in the event of any annexation attempts, President Irfan Ali said recently. Guyana's military also has stepped up recruitment exercises with advertisements on social media sites and visits to various regions around the country. Satellite imagery has revealed that Venezuela's military is amassing troops and expanding bases near the border it shares with Guyana. The presidents of Guyana and Venezuela met in the eastern Caribbean island of St. Vincent in mid-December at the urging of regional leaders who have tried to defuse the situation, but they failed to resolve the territorial dispute, agreeing only to not use threats or force against each other. A second meeting between Ali and Maduro was supposed to have been held last month, but no date has been scheduled. Now, again, you can get into the histories and decide which people were victimized and oppressed and by whom. And then you can decide who would receive real justice if they get to keep control over that land. And just a quick diversion into some of the history of Guyana. This is from Wikipedia. Guyana was colonized by the Dutch before coming under British control in the late 18th century. It was governed as British Guyana with a mostly plantation-style economy until the 1950s. It gained independence in 1966 and officially became a republic within the Commonwealth of Nations in 1970. And so it has followed the pattern of over 50 nations around the world. They were British colonies, and then they, quote-unquote, gained their independence and became British Commonwealth nations. But the thing is, the head of the Commonwealth nations is the British monarch, and they have approval over the government and the prime minister of these nations. They are, in virtually every way that matters, still British colonies, and that includes Australia, Canada, and New Zealand, but not the United States. Definitely not the United States. We won real independence from the British Empire. Not this sort of independence where they declare themselves independent and then become a constitutional republic just operating on their own. We had real independence. We have definitely not just been part of the same global regime, operating under slightly different branding with an inspirational origin story. And we could absolutely never be tricked about that fact. Not like all those ignorant black and brown people from South America and Africa, whose countries are clearly just still colonized by the English and the French and the Dutch and the Spanish. No, we have our own real special independence, just like we declared. And, you know, just like they declared too. So what do we have? We have a nation who is concerned that its foreign territory is actually just a global regime colony. They are taking back that territory in alignment with the views of the people who live there, which is, by the way, in accordance with international law. And the global regime is reliant on its totally illegitimate and corrupt governing bodies to keep all of this in place with threats of potential violence. Now, anybody who's in tune with the election fraud conversation at all knows that Venezuela was the testing ground for the election fraud machines that have been responsible for the usurpation of our government here in America. And we have heard stories about this formerly oil-rich nation, which has been torn asunder by communism from this same global regime as a result of election fraud. Their last election was contested between Maduro and a man named Juan Guaido, who Trump famously and surprisingly at his State of the Union recognized as the legitimate president of Venezuela. Now, it's entirely possible that he did that to make sure that he would not be seen as aligned with Nicolas Maduro throughout this period, so that this conflict could be resolved without carrying Donald Trump narratives along with it to be exploited by the Western media. But we'll see how that shakes out in the future. Regardless, there is another election coming up in Venezuela this year. This is the New York Times from March 5th, just a little over a month ago. Venezuela announces election date with opposition candidate still banned. So all of these elements in these storylines are things that we've been hearing about in other places around the world on different timelines. Troops amassing near a border. Sounds like Russia-Ukraine. Sounds like China-Taiwan. An election where opposition candidates are banned. Sounds like Imran Khan in Pakistan. Or like all opposition parties and candidates in Ukraine, where the comedic actor Volodymyr Zelensky's term has ended and I guess he's just sort of still president or something. But let's get into this. Venezuelan officials announced on Thursday that national elections that many had hoped would forge a path toward democracy will be held on July 28th. Oh, a path toward democracy, according to the New York Times. But the decision on a date comes a month after the country's highest court barred the leading opposition candidate from the ballot, leading many to question how free and fair the summer election would be. Now, the New York Times is writing this on the same timeline where they are arguing that Jenna Griswold in Colorado and what's-her-name in Maine should be able to kick Donald Trump off the ballot. And because the Supreme Court said no, they can't do that, they've since been arguing that the Congress is allowed to vote to keep Donald Trump from being president, even if he's already won the election. But let's get back to the article where the New York Times is pretending to care about free and fair elections and a path to our democracy. Still, the announcement from the government of President Nicolas Maduro is at least a partial fulfillment of a commitment to the United States to hold elections this year in exchange for a lifting of crippling economic sanctions. So the United States is saying to Venezuela, we are going to apply economic sanctions until and unless you have an election? Are they going to force them to use Smartmatic machines? Why are we interfering with the politics and the elections of all these other countries? In October, Mr. Maduro signed an accord with the country's opposition and agreed to work toward a free and fair presidential vote. In the agreement, Mr. Maduro said he would hold an election before the end of this year, and the United States in turn lifted some sanctions as a sign of goodwill. But just days later, Mr. Maduro watched as an opposition candidate, Maria Corina Machado, won more than 90% of the vote in a primary election organized by the opposition and without the involvement of the government. The decisive results emphasized her popularity and raised the prospect that she could beat him in a general election. Since then, Mr. Maduro's government has declared Ms. Machado ineligible to run over what it claimed were financial irregularities that occurred when she was a national legislator and arrested several members of her campaign. Men on motorbikes have attacked supporters at her events. Well, she's starting to sound like Aung San Suu Kyi in Myanmar, who was the Obama-Clinton-Soros-aligned candidate who stole the presidential election there and was deposed soon after George Soros, his organization, their bank accounts frozen, the organization kicked out of Myanmar. Just another example of this global regime being removed from countries around the world. The presentation here by the New York Times sounds very similar to how Alexei Navalny was described. The temporary easing of U.S. sanctions on the oil and gas sector is set to expire on April 18th, and the Biden administration could choose then to reimpose them. Tuesday's announcement, quote, makes it crystal clear that Venezuela will not have free and fair elections this year, end quote, all but guarantees that the Biden administration will snap back sanctions, said Jeff Ramsey, a senior fellow for Venezuela at the Atlantic Council, a research institution based in Washington. And obviously, the Atlantic Council is more than that. They are one of the premier think tanks, one of the most influential bodies among the global regime. They are declaring that Venezuela's elections will not be free and fair, and announcing that their toothless sanctions will be reapplied. Chavismo, the socialist-inspired movement that Mr. Maduro heads, has controlled Venezuela for 25 years. Mr. Maduro came to power in 2013 after the death of his predecessor, President Hugo Chavez, and he stayed in power following a 2018 election whose results were widely considered fraudulent. That election was followed by a period of international isolation, in which many countries followed the lead of the United States in refusing to conduct business with Venezuela. That is, until Joe Biden went and unsuccessfully begged them for oil. The date of the coming election, July 28th, is Mr. Chavez's birthday. The announcement came on the date of his death, March 5th. The choice is probably intended to leverage Mr. Chavez's legacy to bolster the electability of Mr. Maduro, who is deeply unpopular, according to Phil Gunson, an analyst with International Crisis Group, who is based in the country's capital, Caracas. Opposition candidates have until March 25th to register, and it is unclear if Ms. Machado's party will try to insist on her candidacy or if it will look to unite around another candidate. A fractured opposition will probably be a boon to Mr. Maduro's candidacy. The combination of a divided opposition, heavy abstention, and weak opponents gives him the best chance of winning without having to commit fraud, Mr. Gunson said. The Times updated this reporting 2 weeks ago. Venezuela opposition hopes third time is charm with anti-Maduro candidate. This is from March 26th. First, it was Maria Corina Machado, a popular former legislator. Then it was supposed to be Corina Yoris, a little-known philosophy professor. Now an opposition coalition has put forward a former diplomat, Edmundo Gonzalez, as their third candidate to run against President Nicolas Maduro in elections scheduled in July. That is, at least for now. So the opposition continues to put up candidates. They need to get one on the ballot. And in the meantime, we have global regime media letting us know that there is no way there's going to be a free and fair election in Venezuela. And what would you imagine the priority here is? Do they care about free and fair elections in Venezuela? Well, of course not. They don't care about free and fair elections anywhere in the world. They care about resources, and they care about where the lines are drawn on the maps. Maduro's saying, I think I'm going to take Guyana back. And the global regime needs a justification for making sure that can't happen. They will have a much easier time selling their position on that story while saying that Maduro is illegitimate and banned all opposition. It seems to me like that's where we're headed. But let's go through the last segment of this article. Six of Ms. Machado's campaign aides have been arrested in recent weeks, and six more have arrest warrants against them and are in hiding. Men on motorbikes have attacked supporters at her events. The government has not commented on the opposition's struggles to register. The country's vice president, Delcy Rodriguez, announced on Sunday on X,
formerly Twitter,
the creation of a state commission against fascism to address threats by, quote, centers of power at the service of the global north, end quote. An unclassified U.S. intelligence report from February stated that Mr. Maduro was likely to win the election and remain in power, quote, because his control of state institutions that influence the electoral process and his willingness to exercise his power. Man, I hope that no one questions the institutions that influence our electoral process. I was told that sort of questioning threatens our democracy. In fact, I was told that in the pages of this very news outlet. While the Maduro administration had placed allies on the Electoral Council, the intelligence report said it was, quote, also trying to avoid blatant voting fraud, end quote. Mr. Maduro, after registering to vote on Monday, claimed without evidence that two members of Ms. Machado's party had tried to kill him that afternoon during a march to celebrate his registration. The party, Come Venezuela, denies that. Kind of sounds a whole lot like when Jair Bolsonaro was stabbed. In his remarks, he criticized members of the opposition, calling them, quote unquote, lackeys of the right. They dedicated themselves to ask for sanctions against society and the economy, to ask for the blockade and the invasion of their own country, he said. They do not think for themselves. They do not act for themselves. They are pawns in the U.S. empire's game to take over Venezuela. On July 28th, he added, addressing the opposition, there will be elections with you or without you. Now, it is certainly odd that he would call these global regime aligned candidates and parties lackeys of the right. But you have to imagine that perspectives on the political spectrum will necessarily vary by country. And then you have to allow for the possibility that he is simply accepting the common labeling of fascist movements as the right, despite the fact that fascism is an outgrowth of Marxism. It is a collectivist ideology and necessarily of the left. Now, to the extent that he views the United States, and more accurately, that global regime as a fascist empire, then the rest of what he's saying totally makes sense, and he's got a good argument. He says they do not think for themselves, they do not act for themselves, they are pawns in the U.S. empire's game to take over Venezuela. And when you consider what's happening in Guyana, when you consider that it is the global regime's primary motivation to make sure that they keep that territory with its resources, the same picture emerges here that has emerged everywhere else. The global regime is desperately trying to hold on to its proxy states around the world, maintaining their control over the people and the resources, regardless of what the people want. And that, my friends, is in violation of international law. Now, I wanted to get into some Ukraine stuff and maybe get to some Israel and Iran stuff, but that will have to be saved for another day. I will be back tomorrow at the same reasonable time on the same reasonable podcast network. I don't have a network. Masks and lockdowns don't work. They lied to you about a pandemic. And Joe Biden will never be president.
In my mind, that's the end game.
If you're listening to this episode for free, you can support me and support the show and the work I do by signing up for a paid subscription at imyourmoderator.substack.com. You can do so for as low as $50 a year or $5 a month. Comes out to under a quarter per episode, and you'll blast right through the paywall for all of the writing. The merch store is www.cancelcouture.com, and you can find everything else by heading to Linktree. Linktree.com/I'mYourModerator. And I'll see you soon out on the range.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
In my mind, that's the end game.
Thanks for listening. If you'd like to follow what I'm reading and thinking throughout the day, you can do that by downloading the Telegram Messenger app and going to t.me/I'mYourModerator. On social media, you can follow me on Truth Social, Getter, and Gab at I'm Your Moderator. I also have channels on Rumble and BitChute. If you'd like to follow the writing, you can find me at I'myourmoderator.substack.com. The merch site is cancelcouture.com, or go direct shop.spreadshirt.com/cancel-couture. If you'd like to support the podcast financially, the best place to do that is Ko-Fi. Go to ko-fi.com/I'myourmoderator. And all of these details will appear in the show notes with each episode. I'll see you soon down on the range.
It's happening!